Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 13. I'm Karen, and as usual, I am joined by Kristen.
Hello, everyone.
We are doing a socially distant podcast today, just to be on the safe side after some holiday shenanigans. So
to be clear, we don't think anyone is actually positive, but there's just some ambiguity in the air. So
we just want to make sure. Although I am kind of sad because now I won't be able to read your facial expressions. Like having done podcasts for like close to a decade and doing it over Zoom and everything, like you're used to doing it this way, but like it's really nice sitting in the same room as somebody and just carrying on a regular conversation.
It is. It really, really is. I do miss it. But yeah. Hopefully we'll be back to our normally scheduled craziness next week.
Yeah, exactly. You'll still get craziness. Don't worry. Just.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
A different kind of craziness. So if you would like to contact us, you can do so at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, and Facebook, and at Prophecy Radio Podcast at gmail.com. Today, we've got a cool episode for you. We're going to talk about the book moments that we want to see in the television show. Some of them are going to be major ones. Some of them are going to be really, really tiny, insignificant ones. But after watching the Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief movie and being very disappointed at some of the stuff they changed and left out, it felt appropriate to kind of talk about what we really want to see in the television show. So I think we're both pretty excited about that.
Oh, yeah.
But first, we're going to get into our news and updates. So first and foremost, Happy New Year. It is now 2022, which, I mean, I've always felt kind of like New Year is like, yeah, fresh start and everything, but also like you're at the bottom of the ladder and you have to like climb back up toward the end of the year and everything. And but we have a lot of really cool stuff coming up in the Percy Jackson and Rick Riordan Presents fandom. So I'm actually really excited that we're now on this side of things and we can be like, yeah, all those books we were really anticipating coming out in 2022, they're just around the corner now.
Right. And that TV show that we're all dying to get a piece of is maybe a year and a half away.
Yeah.
2 years away. Yeah. Like now that it's 2022, it's like, okay, we're a little closer, right?
Mm-hmm. And the Solangelo book, like one step closer to everything we want. So that's nice. Okay. Speaking of everything we want, Kristen, my dream came true.
It did.
We now have 100 followers on Twitter, which I know like is not a lot, but it's a first like major milestone. And I literally did have a dream about having 100 followers. So I'm glad that we finally made it that far. And it feels really nice that people are listening to us and interacting with us and everything. It makes me feel a little less alone as we go on this journey.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's nice to know that people find us interesting and want to listen to our chats.
Yeah. And so people are still following us and still listening to us, despite the fact that we did an episode about the Lightning Thief movie. We were so worried, you guys. We were like, oh, this feels like a bad idea. But I think it actually turned out really great. So no,
we were able to see it with a more critical eye now. Mm-hmm. And I think that was interesting. So
yeah,
thanks guys.
For sure. Yeah. Thanks for not leaving us just because we talked about the movie. We only have one more movie to go and people like that one better. So hopefully we're out of the woods now. All right. So our major update today basically comes from Rick's blog. We got a December 30th, 2021 final blog post. It was kind of a year in review sort of thing. So not a whole ton of like major updates, but just some really nice things to run through. First and foremost, the Rick Riordan Presents imprint has 3 million copies combined in print, 35 combined starred reviews, and 56 combined weeks on the New York Times bestseller list.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, they've been doing this since 2018. So it's been, I think that's when the first book came out. So it's been a little while, but still, like, and we had talked before about everyone who wrote for Cursed Carnival. If they weren't a New York Times bestselling author before, they are now. Like, this imprint is doing so many good things for so many people, readers and writers alike. And it's so exciting that I feel like, not that we're just getting started, because, you know, there's already been plenty of peaks that we've hit, but like, it's still climbing. And I'm so excited for that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's just, there's so much, we talk about like so much upcoming and so many things to, you know, to look forward to with Rick Riordan Presents, but like seeing how far they've already come, and it's only been 4 years, and, you know, 3 million copies, 35 starred reviews, 56 weeks. Like, that's nothing to scoff at. That's yeah, really awesome.
Definitely. And speaking of things coming up, we have two major books coming up in the next couple of months. First and foremost, we have Tiger Honor, which is a sort of sequel to Dragon Pearl by Yoon-Ha Lee, comes out on January 4th, 2022. So for us, it's literally tomorrow. the artwork is by Vivian Toh, and very cool cover. You can read the prologue already, which I'll have a link for that in the show notes. This is one of my most anticipated books, I think. I don't know why it sort of snuck up on me, but I did enjoy Dragon Pearl, and this one just seems like it's going to be such a cool read. And not going to lie, I like that it's a little shorter. I like that it's more of a standalone. When you have a lot of books to read, you kind of look for those things like, oh, can I knock this out in a couple of hours? Great. Put it at the top of my list.
Yeah, Karen is quite into the shorter novels these days. I mean, big ones are fun, but yeah, she's been knocking out all the shorter ones. So
yeah, it just makes me feel like I'm getting so much done when I can read a short book.
I mean, I get it. I definitely get it.
Yeah. Yoon-Ha Lee is also going on a virtual tour for Tiger Honor. It starts January 4th and it goes through the 11th. He's hitting 5 places, Blue Willow Bookshop, Mysterious Galaxy, Third Place Books, Books of Wonder, which is one of my favorites, and Old Firehouse Books. So that's cool. Hopefully there's going to be some cool stuff that comes out of that. If we hear anything interesting, we will catch you guys up on that information. I did not get tickets to any of these though. Oh, the Books of Wonder one is with Carlos Hernandez too. That would have been really cool. I wonder if there are tickets left. Maybe I'll have to check that out. And lastly, for Tiger Honor, Reed Riordan also has a couple of articles about some of the characters from the book. So you can meet Shaman Sena and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Kim Jun, both characters from, or all three of them are characters from the book. So that's kind of exciting. I did not read them because I don't want to be spoiled on anything yet, because I haven't read the book. And there are some spoilers for Dragon Pearl, apparently. So if you haven't read that yet, consider doing that before you check out any of the Reed Riordan stuff.
Good to know. Good to know.
Mm-hmm. We also have Ballad and Dagger coming up. That comes out May 3rd, 2022. And that book cannot come soon enough. I think we're both really excited for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you can pre-order it now. We officially got our advanced reader copy in the mail. So that's very exciting. It was a great surprise to come home to after a little week away from the apartment. And yeah, I wasn't expecting it. I don't know why. I don't know why, because I also thought it was coming out sooner than May. I thought it was maybe coming out in April. And usually we do get them a couple months ahead of time. But either way, very excited to look at it. And can't wait to get the finished copy with that beautiful cover on it.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So some other things from Rick's blog include that Orpheus Collar did some cool artwork to celebrate the fact that Daughter of the Deep will be adapted for Disney Plus. You can find that on the blog post. It's a really cool image of Anna basically in the water, and it says like Disney Plus above it. The movie is still going to be live action. It's not, you know, artwork for the movie or anything like that. It's not animated. It's still going to be live action, but it was really cool. And I always like when either Rick or Becky or Seal, any of them, like share the, you know, fan art or just anything to do with Percy Jackson or any of Rick's other million projects that he has out there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm just getting my first look at it. This artwork is really, really
cool. Yeah, it is fun. I like the style of it a lot. It looks very smooth and sleek. Okay. So the Solangelo book is going well. There are no major updates on that. However, Rick did say the manuscript is in my court now. I am doing my draft, adding my voice and ideas to Mark. So in the end, you will get a novel that is, I hope, fully mine and also fully theirs. I just really liked that quote. One, because, okay, he's still working on it. That's good to know. I like the little updates, even if it's like, yep, still doing the same thing I told you last time. Like, I still enjoy checking in and everything. But I really like this concept of like the novel is fully Rick's and fully Mark's, and they just put it together for one, you know, giant present for us. Like, that makes me feel really good about what this book is going to be, because obviously Nico is Rick's character and Will is Rick's character and all the other ones, but Mark has such a great perspective on what Nico will be thinking and feeling that to combine those two together is like a transformer of awesomeness.
I like that. It's a transformer. That's kind of awesome in visual to like think about. No, I especially because this is like Rick's first attempt at co-writing.
Yeah,
really. It's good that that's like the mindset that he's going into it with. Like, this isn't my book and my world and Mark's helping. It's like, this is Mark's story. Mm-hmm. And I know this world and these characters. So here's my, you know, parts of it. Like, here's where I can really help. Yeah. Rather than like, you know, this is my story and I got this, you know, I have this person, Mark, here to help me tell the story. Right. Like, it's really both of their story. And I like that that's the mindset he's going into it with. That's
really cool. It's a very collaborative experience. And honestly, I think that's going to make the book even better than it was already going to be. Is like when you don't have people fighting over, well, this is mine, or like being super territorial. Like, he really handed this book and this story and Nico over to Mark, trusting that Mark would take good care of the character. And it's clear that they have. And Rick is just happy to, like, you know, Rick also knows what we enjoy out of the stories and why we love Nico so much. And so he's making sure that we're going to be happy as he is. And the whole thing is just a really cool experience and a great collaboration between these two.
Agreed.
So it's also been 2 years since they began working on the King Chronicles movies for Netflix and the Percy Jackson television show for Disney Plus. Can't believe it's been 2 years already, which is hilarious because when, you know, it was first announced, it's like, oh, it's going to be so long until we see the light of day for this. And I'm like, oh yeah, it's already been 2 years. Like, it went by fast. It didn't go by fast, but it is crazy to think that they started working on it that long ago.
Agreed. Yeah.
There are no new updates, which is kind of a good thing. Things are still plugging along. Hopefully we'll get an official green light this month. That's not a for sure thing, but Rick did say that they're finishing up the first four screenplays for season one. So the first four episodes should be done very soon. They'll turn them in. The Disney execs will look them over. And at that point, they'll decide whether they want to go forward with the show or not. I know that we're in the trenches here and everything seems wonderful, but like, I just keep thinking they're not going to say no, right? Like the response that people are getting, the fan base that Rick Riordan has, like, this is a perfect thing to put on Disney Plus. I just can't imagine them saying no, but we're going to be cautiously optimistic and hopefully everything will go smoothly.
Cautious optimism is the way to go here, because you're right. Like, I don't foresee any reason why they would just like put the kibosh on it now, but there have been things, you know, properties in the past that have been far along in the process and, you know, things have changed. So we don't want to count our chickens, but we also, I mean, things are looking up and, you know, if Rick has absolutely no reason to think that we'll get anything but a green light eventually, it's just a matter of time and them, you know, you have to have, you know, a certain number of episodes prepared and like the execs have to feel ready to sign off. So like, hopefully that's the only thing that's really holding them back from getting the green light is just having those scripts, them seeing where the show is going and, you know, yeah, seeing the fan excitement for it. Like, I think all of that will work in its favor. So.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, speaking of just a matter of time, like he did say the first part of 2022, we should find out whether or not it gets greenlit if that stays on schedule. I'm just, you know, like if March comes and goes, then maybe I'll be like, where's our news? But until then, I'm just going to kind of sit back and not get too antsy about it because there are so many factors at play here and so much money at play for any production that you never know what's going to happen. So it's hard, but I'm just going to try to be as patient as possible.
Yep, I think that's the best. It's just leave it in the hands of those that are, you know, have been protecting it so far and just kind of give it time.
And Rick sounds really happy. And if he's happy, I'm happy. So,
yep.
Agreed. There you go. Lastly, the inbox for the casting call tape submissions for Annabeth and Grover, and I guess maybe Percy too. I don't know if it was for all three of them, but it got a little full over the holidays. A lot of people submitting things and the Disney people went out for the holidays. And so got a little jammed, but everything is back to normal now. It should be good. Tapes are being received. So if you are still planning on submitting a tape, go ahead and do it. It's there. And I'll include the link again for that if you want to look into that process.
Very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, Christmas time is crazy anyways.
Right.
Especially for production because everybody's like, okay, time to shut it down. We're going on break. And it's like, wait, hold on.
Definitely. Okay, so let's get into our main discussion today. We're going to be talking about the Lightning Thief book moments that we specifically want to see in the television show. Now, like I said, this idea was kind of born out of last week's episode where we talked about the movie and they changed a bunch of things. They left out a bunch of things. And, you know, some moments that were really big that they changed or left out were really disappointed, but there were also some smaller moments too. And we're going to have a little mix of both here, like some major things that they really should have included that we hope to see in the television show, but also some like very tiny moments that would just be a nice little nod for fans who have been, you know, with the books for so long at this point. So the first major moment that we wanted to talk about was Clarice and Percy's fight in the bathroom. This one's a huge one for me because one, I think it's hilarious that he had to deal with toilet water and all of that. And two, it's a really good introduction to Clarice, which we didn't get at all in the movie. So I think it really sets up their, like, the antagonistic relationship that they have while also giving you a hint of Percy's powers and just giving you a really funny, kind of action-packed moment at the same time.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. It would be nice to meet Clarice. So mm-hmm. I think we're all in agreement there. But yeah, I like the slow, gradual understanding of what Percy's powers are. And I think this scene, I mean, obviously, it's one of the first major, like, confrontations that Percy has other than the Furies. Like, it's the first one he has at Camp Half-Blood.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it has to be in the show at some point. But yeah, it just, it gives you a really good taste of what Percy's power is going to look like and how, you know, he handles kind of first using his powers, like, somewhat knowingly. Like, I'm interested to see how that all comes alive. But in the moment reading it in the book, it feels so cinematic the way it's written.
Yeah.
So I really don't see any problem, you know, bringing it from the page to the screen. I think there's a lot written in there that's going to translate well. So it's just a matter of seeing it and seeing how they decide to adapt it.
Yeah, I completely agree that it's a really cinematic moment. It also will really help set the tone for the show because you have a bunch of kids fighting with each other. You have the bullies, which, like, always happens in middle school and stuff like that. And you have this funny moment of the toilets exploding and Clarice being thrown out of the bathroom, kind of juxtaposed with a very action-packed little moment where the tension's going to be really high. Percy is feeling like a fish out of water, pun kind of intended, and and he really doesn't know how to feel about Clarice and the other campers and what's going on. Like, he's just been thrown in the deep end, pun also kind of intended. I'm so sorry. There's going to be a lot of those.
Yeah. Well, and Annabeth kind of gets a good idea of who she thinks his parent is going to be. Like, you right. can tell after the scene, she has an idea because she's smart and, you know,
mm-hmm.
so it does kind of set the stage for a lot of little things that then, you know, we learn about in the following 3, 4, 5 chapters of the book. So yeah, it is a good kicking off point for a lot of things.
Yeah, I completely agree. And speaking of Annabeth, that's another major one that I think we are both really interested in seeing. Is Annabeth taming Cerberus? Because you don't get any hint of that in the movie. You don't even really get the underworld. Cerberus is not there at all. And again, like, a really good way to set the tone of the books where you have this big scary monster. And yet it's this funny moment of Annabeth, like, throwing a ball and getting Cerberus to be obedient. And it's a really little nice shining moment for Annabeth too. So I'm really excited for that and really excited to see the CGI there. Like, same thing with the Chimera, if they choose to include that, which I kind of feel like after reading Rick's blog from the last time we talked about it, that might be a big one for him since they decided to go with the Hydra and he was very much against that. So yeah. The creature work in this show, we've talked about a few times before, but, like, I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, I agree both with Cerberus and the Chimera. I think hopefully in the show, we'll get a little bit better of that balance between, you know, incredible, fun, high energy action and that, like, fun, silly, middle grade entertainment aspect of this series too, which I think is a bit of what the movie was mostly missing. Is it felt too serious. It felt too old. You know, it lost a bit of that fun, middle grade, innocent silliness. And exactly what you said, like, Annabeth taming Cerberus is hilarious in the moment because you're like, it's this giant three-headed dog and of course it's going to eat them, and we all have an idea of what a three-headed dog looks like now thanks to Harry Potter. So it's like, we all have an idea of how big this thing could be, and to know, you know, she throws a ball and very quickly earns Cerberus's love, and, you know, it's really easy for her to kind of train him in the moment. And that just sounds like a lot more fun to me than this giant creature that's, you know, looming over them and is scary. Like, I would rather see him happy and then a little sad when Annabeth has to walk away.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. That just sounds like a lot of fun. So yeah, I hope that that tonal shift will be in the show and a lot, you know, a really good way to lighten the show a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And you're completely right. And, but also at the same time, like that moment when they have to go into the underworld for the first time is really actually very scary. Like they're trying to get past the guards. They're trying not to be noticed by any of the shades that are down there. They're trying to get past Cerberus. Like there is a lot going on in that moment. And while I think you could take Cerberus out of that and still have a very like anxiety riddled, suspenseful time trying to get into the underworld, it just like Cerberus is such a famous character in Greek mythology that mm-hmm. it would be really weird to like leave him out of it.
Agreed.
Yeah. But speaking of the underworld, I know you're a really big fan of how the underworld was portrayed in the books, and that's something I think we both really want to see come out of the television show.
Yeah, it, again, as we already kind of talked about, the movies didn't really do the underworld the best service. Like, it basically just became what we all, you know, think about when we think about hell and all of that. So it would be nice to get a good look at the Greek version of the underworld, which has, you know, all kinds of different areas and spaces for all kinds of different souls and people that have lived different lives. So it's not just all this, you know, flaming pit of despair. It's, there's a lot of different places that people end up. And I really loved the way they portrayed it in the book. And I'm interested to see how they interpret that for the adaptation. Definitely.
Yeah. I started playing Hades again after like taking a break for a little while, and they have, it's basically like they break up the underworld into different chunks. You have like 10 levels of, you know, Tartarus, and then 10 levels of Asphodel and that sort of thing. And it really kind of drives home this idea of like these being different sections in the underworld with different aspects of it. And just being able to see them walk through all of those, I think will be really cool. And I'm very interested in seeing the artwork for that sort of thing and how they're going to portray that on screen. But I know Tartarus is a really big one for you too.
Yeah, well, mostly because it's so important for the rest of this series and the next series after that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Tartarus is, you know, we already kind of know that Tartarus is where the monsters reform and all that. You know, we learn that pretty quickly. But there's so much going on with what is in Tartarus and what is looming there and how it affects Percy and all of the heroes later on in the story and all of that, that it just, this first meeting of Tartarus, like them, you know, interacting with this pit and getting a feeling for what's going on there and then almost getting like sucked into it. Yeah. Like it's all just a really, I feel like a really important, bold, scary, foreshadowing of all the craziness that Tartarus is going to cause in the future.
Yeah, I'm still shocked that they didn't include that in the movie just because it is kind of the point of everything and they didn't include it. And it's such a great way to bring down some of that humor into something a little scarier, a little more serious. And in that moment, you're so afraid for Grover because he's about to go over the edge and you kind of wonder, okay, who is speaking from the depths of Tartarus and what's actually going on here? And you're right. Like, I mean, I've said it before, House of Hades is my favorite book and you can't not set up Tartarus if you know, who knows if they'll ever get to the second series. There's plenty to do in the first series, but it would just be really, really cool to see that and to get that like creep factor. And I doubt they're going to go like too dark in a children's television show, but I would like them to get a little spooky.
I mean, yeah, this series has a lot of like truly scary and truly spooky stuff in it. So I definitely hope that they get a bit of that in addition to the fun and the silliness and the, you know, the friendships and the love stories and all of that. Like, I want it all. So just a little bit of everything. Thank you.
I also want it all. And I don't think that's too much to ask.
No, I don't either.
It's not. Speaking of first experiences and first encounters, how about Percy's first underwater experience falling into the Mississippi?
Okay, if we're including the bathroom, which mm-hmm. we're so excited to see happen, and of course they have to include Capture the Flag and Percy's first, like, experience with water healing.
It was very hard for me not to include the Capture the Flag moment, by the way, because I was like, obviously they're going to do that. It's so pivotal. Like, I wasn't really worried about that not being in there, but just know that is my number one moment that I want to see on screen.
I mean, of course. Yeah. Yes. I think we're all super anxious to see that, like, as the book kind of
done right
to us, we want to see it do that way. Yeah, exactly. But no, I think Percy's first underwater experience, him falling into the Mississippi and not just, like, bobbing back to the surface and getting out, like, him falling to the bottom mm-hmm. and then realizing that he can breathe underwater, and him having an interaction with the creatures down there and with the spirit. I forget who it was that talked to him. I think it was a dryad, wasn't it? Or a naiad, one of the two.
Naiad.
Anyway. Yeah. But, like, him having that whole experience underwater and kind of taking stock of how powerful he is, like, what he's capable of, and the fact that his clothes don't, you know, necessarily get wet and all of that. Like, it's just, really important to Percy as a character and him understanding what being a demigod means and what being a son of Poseidon means. That I love that moment because he takes stock of a lot of things as he's falling into the Mississippi River, and replacing the whole St. Louis arc with the Parthenon scene and with the Hydra and all of that. I kind of feel like there's a good chance that we will be getting the St. Louis arc scene and eventually Percy underwater as well. Cause we just got that sense that Rick was not happy that they changed all of that. And I feel like if they're going to do one thing, you know, if there's one major change that they're going to make, it's they're actually including all the things that happened on this trip rather than replacing them or changing a bunch of stuff. So
right, exactly. And I think that moment is so cinematic too, in terms of him kind of falling to the bottom of the river and hearing and seeing the woman, and just like even later when we see her again, I think mm-hmm. that is a really important through line, because that's how he gets the pearls and that's how he sort of learns more about what's going on. And it's a great introduction to his powers and everything. And I think that I wouldn't blame them too much if they wanted to switch up these sequences a little bit or do things a little bit differently, because a lot of us already know that he's a son of Poseidon. A lot of the people tuning into the show are already going to know how his powers work, but you also want to present that information in a very clear way for the people that will be tuning in who know nothing about the books or the character. And I think part of the reason why the movie decided to change things around was because they didn't want to go through all of those steps to reveal who Percy's father was and what his powers could do, because they just wanted to get it out of the way to get through the rest of the story. But the great thing about the television show is we can take a little more time. And I really hope that they'll kind of lean into that, because I guess all of this is to say, I don't really care if they take their time to reveal that he's a son of Poseidon or to reveal how his powers work, because even though I know all of that information, I just want to see it. Like, I am happy yeah. to kind of experience this thing that I already am aware of, but in a different format, on a different platform. Like, that's totally fine with me.
I mean, basically, my brain is kind of trying to make the parallel of, like, imagine that we started Harry Potter, but he's just at the castle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he already knows he's a wizard, and he's at the castle, and he's starting his...
There's no sorting, like, ceremony.
Right, like, we miss him finding out he's a wizard from Hagrid, and we miss all of that. Like, it would just feel weird. It wouldn't necessarily change the story, but it would just feel really odd to not get... all of that, to see all of that happen on screen, watching Harry kind of understand what's happening and where he's going and what it means for him and all of that. Like, and just like him, Harry learning his parents are dead and how they died as opposed to what he thought. It's the same thing here with Percy and learning who his dad is. It's completely changing everything he knows about the world.
Mm-hmm.
So... yeah, seeing that all happen on screen is going to be really, really cool.
Yeah, and it not only gives us time to really care about the on-screen version of this character, but it also gives us time to see how the actor who will eventually be playing Percy will react to all of these things happening to him. And I just, like, I love that. I think that because they're going to be casting young and probably an unknown, you kind of want that extra time to see them be immersed in this world and not just throw them into the middle of the action where you've got a million other things going on and you're concentrating on, you know, these fight sequences and stuff. Like, I want to see the wonder in his eyes as Percy learns about all of these things.
Yeah, agreed.
I guess this is sort of a moment, sort of like there were some characters that were very, very obviously left out of the movie too. And one of those is Aries, which I think was just a huge misstep in so many ways. We discussed that on the last episode, but are there any particular Aries moments that you really wish had been in the movie or that you cannot wait to see in the show?
Well, I mean, that final battle,
mm-hmm,
with them on the beach and the humans around them seeing something completely different happening while, you know, Percy is taking on a god. Like, yeah. It's a huge scene and it floors me that we didn't see it in the movie. Like, I think my brain has invented that scene because I feel like I've seen it. Like, I feel like I can see, you know, Logan Lerman walking out of the water and, like, this insanely nondescript godly presence in front of him. Like, I, you know, like, I feel like I can kind of fill in some of the blanks based on what we saw of the gods in, mm-hmm, those movies and Logan Lerman as Percy and all that. Like, I feel like it should be there because it's such a huge, crazy, fun, insane action beat that I'm shocked they left it out. So yeah, I think that battle is specifically one moment that they're obviously not going to leave out of the, yeah, TV show.
Again, I'm really curious how they're going to do it because in the books, it is guns that they're fighting with.
Yeah.
And I just, I think probably the writer's room will agree too. Like, that's not the best look. So I wonder if it's going to be like a sword fight or something at the end, which would be really cool. Imagine like Riptide clashing with Ares's like giant sword or something. Like, that could still be a really fun, interesting scene and kind of allows you to have more of a fight sequence and more of like those reaction shots that I really enjoy seeing versus just like, okay, here are two people who have guns and like, we're going to see like who gets shot first or something.
Well, and like considering they're on the beach and walking out of the water at one point, like Percy is or whatever, it would be kind of hilarious if they're, you know, having this sword fight and the spectators see like two guys with their surfboards, like,
right,
smacking at each other or something.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, I can totally see something as silly as that being what the humans see. And like, it's still looking scary because you've got this grown adult, you know, taking on this child. Like, I can still, yeah, see it being a big deal and like the cops being called and all of that for this same thing without having to use guns. Cause I do think that they'll probably find a better way to bring the misted side of the fight to life. But yeah,
right,
there's definitely going to be a Riptide, you know, knife sword fight that I can't wait to see. So.
What if the people see them battling with like skis or something? Like, I feel like that's something that right? Rick would do that. Like, it makes zero sense that they have skis, but it's the closest thing to what a sword would look like. And people are like, why are they fighting with skis on the beach? This makes no sense. Could
be water skis.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, it's not completely unheard of.
Yeah.
No, I think there's definitely some room for interpretation and, some really good fun to have with the misted side of that scene for sure.
Yeah. I'm excited for Ares rolling up on his human skin motorcycle and the diner scene in general, because I think Percy getting sassy and not really caring that he's talking back to a god is going to be really funny. And also that scene gives you this real concrete idea of what Ares's presence can do to a person. And just seeing, you know, what I assume is going to be this big hulking scary motorcycle guy sitting down at a diner table to share some cheeseburgers and fries with a couple of kids is just going to be really funny.
Agreed. Yeah. And I mean, that motorcycle sticks out as one of the details. You're like, yeah, they have to include something like that. And he is going, you know, he's going to be this imposing, crazy adult figure. And yeah, I think that Ares' entrance and the big fight scene are probably the two Ares moments that stick out the most. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in general, anything having to do with Ares, I think, is going to be very interesting to see.
Yeah. Also, it shouldn't need to be said, and this will come as no surprise to anyone, but please give us Mr. D. Like, yeah. We need him. Yeah. He is a vital part of Camp Half-Blood, and I need his sour demeanor and his sass and him never calling Percy the right name. Maybe that should have been one of like my moments. It's just him never getting Percy's name right, I think will be so funny. But he's such a character that he will also really add to the tone of the show. So I can't wait to see that.
Plus, I need more Diet Coke addicts in my
life. Yeah. Not by choice, though. He's not Diet Coke addict by choice.
I know, but still. But
yeah. So I think those were like our main moments that we really want to see in the television show. And again, like we could literally go through chapter by chapter, and we kind of did when we were rereading, going, this would be so cool to see on screen. But those are some of the major ones. I think, in terms of the trio, there's a lot of hope to see Percy on screen, and we're really excited about that. But I think we both have a lot of love for Annabeth too. And it's so funny because in the first book, I think one of your favorite moments was when she was like drawing battle plans right before they were doing Capture the Flag. She was kind of like looking off in the distance and kind of drawing battle plans, maybe on like the railing or something, wherever she was standing, kind of, you know, spaced out a little bit. And for some reason, that moment's really stuck in my head because you mentioned it and because it was such a good representation of like who Annabeth is and how she's always thinking about battle strategy. And so I kind of want them to throw in like a little baby moment like that. I think it would just be a really nice nod to the books and good character development. And just to like see that on screen, to have her constantly thinking about that sort of thing goes a long way to explain how her brain works.
Yeah. I mean, we hit on our the bigger moments, like the crazy things, but like there's so many of these little smaller details that will make this show so much more fun for people who've been reading these books for, what is it, a decade now? Mm-hmm. Like, all of those fans that have been reading them from the start or have picked them up in the last 3 or 4 years and have read them closely and love these little moments. So, yeah, little things like, yeah, Annabeth, you know, sketching out battle plans mid-conversation with Percy, figuring out, you know, how she's going to run this Capture the Flag game. And, like, even her just calling him Seaweed Brain. Like, I still can't believe she never says it in the first movie.
I know.
I feel like I made it happen. Again, in my brain, I just assumed she said it. Because it's so dumb to leave it out. It's a line. It literally cost them nothing. And they left it out. Like, because they, you know, seaweed brain, maybe it just dates the show a little bit. Like, maybe it's something, it's a little too young for what they were going for the movie. But, like, it's such a huge part of their interaction. And it's so indicative of what, like, Annabeth thinks of Percy at the beginning. And so, yeah, I can't wait to hear her call him seaweed brain. It's got to happen, right? It just has to.
Yeah. And I don't even think that's that juvenile that they couldn't have put it in the movie either. And it would have been like, people are obsessed with seaweed brain and Wise Girl. Like, a lot of the artwork that you see with them has those words on them. And like, it's such a good representation of their kind of relationship, where they're not antagonistic, but they like to, you know, goad each other a little bit. And yeah, you're right. It would have literally cost nothing for her to say it one time in the movie, and they didn't. So it's definitely going to be in the show. Like, pretty much can guarantee it. Rick knows, right? That it needs to be in there.
Yeah, I can't imagine it wouldn't be at some point, even if she only says it once. Like, it's got to be.
Yeah. I also have a Grover moment, which is him giving Percy the tin can at the end. Like, I think that moment made both of us very emotional. And yeah. It's, again, kind of silly, but also very deep and important, and a great way to show the tone of the show and to show you what is important to Grover and everything. It's just, it's great. So can't wait for that.
I mean, yeah, it is such a sweet moment for them. And it's also kind of silly and ridiculous, because you think about him handing him a flattened tin can and you're like, that is not going to help him at all. But it's, you know, it's so important to Grover. And so therefore we're both like crying reading the book, like, oh my god, it's so cute, you know. Again, one of those little details that I just can't foresee them leaving out. It's important. It just is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm also kind of, there are so many little spaces too throughout this, like maybe not major set pieces or anything, but you know, they obviously have to get to the underworld somehow, and meeting Karen, I think, will be a really interesting moment. Like, it's not long, it's not, you know, drawn out or anything, but them, you know, walking up to the desk and having that quick interaction, and Percy having to be, you know, kind of on point with that interaction to get them where they need to go and all of that. It's so brief, but I feel like, again, pretty dang important. And yeah, I'm interested in that one too.
And that elevator scene, I think, is going to be so cool. And it's such a great transition, like such a great way to show them going from like our world to the underworld, that even just in terms of like cinematography and transitioning the characters from one place to the other, it's literally the perfect way to do that in the television show. So I feel like it's just got to be in there.
Yeah, it just has to be. And one last thing that like just came to my brain, one more little thing, is the beads, like the camp beads. We've seen fan interpretations of what the beads look like and what the, you know, the drawings on each bead for each year of camp would look like and all of that. But honestly, I'm really excited to see Rick's like serious interpretation of what all of those beads look like, and you know, they're all gonna have their necklaces, they have to, right?
Yeah,
silly little things. It's really the tiny things that I'm probably most excited about, but that's always with me when it comes to, you know, adaptations, especially, you know, the Harry Potter ones and that sort of thing. It's those tiny little moments that they remember to give to fans. That's always the things that stick out to me the most.
Yeah, for sure.
I think those are the ones that I'm most anxious for. I mean, I love all the big stuff and definitely, you know, anxious to see it all, but those little things just make your heart really happy.
I agree. And this is not to mention all of the other stuff they're going to add to the television show, because they'll have time to put in more background stuff and more little character work that we didn't necessarily get in the books. Like Rick's already talked about the possibility of this kind of opening the doors a little bit wider and us being able to see things that Percy might not necessarily have seen through his eyes in the book. So like, there's so much greatness coming as long as the television show gets a green light and we actually get to see it come out. But yeah, this is just, it's really, really exciting. And I can't wait to see what comes up.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many campers and so many people that, right? Yeah, they could give you a brief glimpse from somebody else to kind of let you see what exactly is going on. Like, we don't necessarily have to be 100% all of the time being told everything from Percy's perspective in the show.
Yeah.
And I think even that's just another way to, yeah.
Even just like wide shots of the camp and like going through camp and seeing what the other campers are doing and like dinner and, you know, that whole thing. Like, I just,
yeah,
we're just going to keep coming up with things. So we should probably just call it there. But
if you guys, the longer we sit here, the more we could come up with.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. So if you guys have any moments that you really, really want to see in the television show, let us know. We'll read them out on the next episode. Please just tell us, you know, what you can't wait to see, because I'm like bursting at the seams to keep talking about this television show, and we still have so long to go, but it's going to be a lot of fun and it'll definitely be worth the wait.
Oh yeah. And there's probably at least one or two like super significant things that we completely forgot. So make sure to point those out.
All right. Should we jump back into Sea of Monsters now?
Yeah, why not? All right. We're on chapter 3 and 4. So we'll start with chapter 3, entitled We Hail the Taxi of Eternal Torment.
Amazing.
Right? Good title. Good title. After escaping the now burning gymnasium at Meriwether Prep, Percy and Tyson meet up with Annabeth in an alley, where we learn Annabeth is not Tyson's biggest fan. We just don't know why. Something about Laestrygonians, but more on that later. Our heroes really need to get to camp, so Annabeth pulls out a gold drachma and summons the Chariot of Damnation. Wow. And it's driven by the Fates. Yes, the only have one eyeball between the three of them, Fates. The ride is, well, less than smooth, but our trio arrive at camp to find out that it's under attack. Welcome back, Percy Jackson.
Yeah. I feel like that's, it's like in, you know, I'm sorry for all the Harry Potter references, but like every time, Harry goes back to school and he's like so excited, but then like all this crazy stuff happens and it's like, do you actually enjoy school? Because you almost die every year.
Right. And you say it's home, but like, what kind of home is that?
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah. No, yeah, for sure. I
was so mad at Annabeth in this chapter. She was so mean.
Yeah. I mean, again, it's so hard. It's so hard. But that's, you know, that's what she knows.
Yeah.
This is how she grew up. This is what she knows about this. And so I try really hard to forgive her in my heart for her meanness, because she is really mean in this chapter. And I just have to remember that, like, this is what she knows. This is what she's been taught. This is how she's learned. And, you know, there's room for growth.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it was actually a really good moment for Percy, because he didn't back down from her. And he was like, you know, he's standing right here. Why don't you ask him those questions? Like, why are you talking to him like he doesn't exist? Or why are you saying these mean things right to his face? Like, it's awful. And the fact that he could stand up to his friend when something like that is happening is a really good, like, part of his character. So I really enjoyed that part. And you're right, like, Annabeth has some preconceived notions of what Cyclops is, and you know, the way that she even describes Tyson later on is like he was a mistake and they don't always come out right. Like, it was so sad to me, but I think it's a really important learning lesson for her. And the fact that, you know, Annabeth, who is incredibly intelligent and already knows so much about this world, she could be a very two-dimensional character in that she's the one who always has the answers. She's the one who always knows the right thing to do. And in this case, like, she's clearly wrong. And I think that enhances her character kind of in the same way that Hermione was, never believed Luna Lovegood and always had like these things that she just wouldn't budge on, even when there was a chance that she could be wrong about things. And she had her own kind of preconceived notions about things that made her very narrow-minded. And I think that's a good thing to have in a character because it makes them more real and more relatable.
I definitely think you're right. I think SPEW is another kind of parallel if you're looking for a Hermione Annabeth parallel, because, like, you know, Hermione thinks she knows everything about the house elf, you know, liberation that she's trying to bring about, but she doesn't necessarily understand house elves themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so as she learns more and more, she kind of sees that not everyone is the same, and Dobby might want freedom, but others may like, you know, being a certain, like, might like serving one family or whatever. There's all kinds of layers to,
right,
to what's going on. And that's exactly what's going on here, is Annabeth, you know, believes what she has learned about Cyclopses and has obviously never really met one. So now having, you know, having one in front of her and meeting one, hopefully her eyes will be opened to some of the things that maybe she was wrong about.
Right.
I was really mad at Annabeth, but meeting Tyson, and like, we got a bit of him in the first two chapters, but really seeing him come alive in this chapter and the next one, like getting a good introduction to him. I still can't believe that he got introduced in the first chapter and we didn't remember, like, that he came up this quickly. I for some reason, I just didn't remember that. So I'm glad that we're diving right into the lore behind Tyson and who he is and, you know, what role he's going to eventually play with Harry, with Percy.
Too many Harry Potter references now.
Way too many, clearly. But yeah, I mean, I feel for Tyson this whole chapter, but he's a good guy, and we're going to get there. We're going to get there one step at a time. The other major event we have to talk about is this taxi ride.
Mm-hmm.
This scene with the Fates driving the taxi and batting their eyeball between, you know, the three of them and their tooth, apparently, too, which is so odd and interesting. It reminds me so much of the night bus scene from,
oh, okay, yeah. No, that's true. That's true. That's funny, because like, I kept thinking of Hercules, like, and so I guess we should say, first of all, these are not the Fates. They're the Gray Sisters, so they are, yes, different.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yes, you are.
So we met the Fates in the first book, and they were the ones who were like knitting the socks and cutting the yarn and everything. The Gray Sisters are sisters to the Gorgons, which is actually really funny because in Greek mythology, Perseus stole their eye in order to learn how to defeat Medusa, who's a Gorgon. So they like they kind of betrayed their own sister in order to get their eye back.
Hmm. Yeah. Which is, I think that's really good to point out, because even I got a little confused.
I know. I had to go look it up because I was like, wait, three old ladies acting crazy. Like, are they the same ones? No, they're different. So yeah, it's easy to get them mixed up.
Well, especially because Percy already met the Fates, like the actual Fates in the first book, right? That wasn't the Gray Sisters?
Correct.
Right. So these are two separate trios of ladies.
Yes.
And it's just, it's really hard to kind of keep them separate. So yeah, good to know. Good to, you know, keep in mind. But yeah, this scene is just insane. And the driving and the, you know, you can see it unfolding on screen. And hopefully we'll get a season two and get a chance to watch this.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think, you know, part of that confusion is, like I said, this reminded me a lot of the Fates from Hercules, where you have the one eyeball and they're like,
yeah,
hitting each other in the back of the head and popping it out. And like, it's so crazy, but it was really funny. And yeah, I do like the night bus vibe to it. I think that could be a really fun, crazy scene to have to witness. And poor Tyson the entire time, like trying not to throw up. I did feel bad for him once again.
I mean, I can imagine it would turn your stomach being thrown around like that. Not so much fun. During this during this ride, obviously the Gray sisters lose their eyeball and Percy catches it, unwillingly. And he blackmails them. And yeah. I'm sorry, but that takes some real cojones, I guess. Like it takes some real gall to blackmail these people sitting in the front who obviously know things. Like they give him one hint that they know something about what he's looking for or where he needs to go or whatever's coming next. And he won't let it go. Like he immediately latches on and is like, tell me,
yeah.
Tell me or you're not getting it back. I'll throw it out the window into oncoming traffic. Like what? Like Percy. So yeah.
He was being real brave as they're zooming to their death. And I think this is another moment where like Percy doesn't really understand the world that he's in and doesn't understand the true danger of what's going on and is sort of like pushing his luck and pushing the limits, which definitely works out for him in the end because he does get those coordinates. But, you know, he probably shouldn't have done it. Annabeth was probably definitely not the voice of reason.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And just to say it out loud so that we have a record that we talked about it, those coordinates or those random numbers that we don't know what they are 30, 31, 75, 12.
Yes.
Mysterious sequence of four numbers that will definitely come into play later.
Yes.
At some point. And whether it's this book or later, I don't remember, but they come
into play. Do you want to know? I did Google it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I'll just ask, is it this book?
It is.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
See, that's all we need to know. So we'll get answers coming up in one of the next dozen episodes of this podcast.
Yeah.
All right. And I think that pretty much wraps up chapter 3. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do our favorite quotes. Do you want to do yours first?
Yes. I may have stolen the best one because it was...
I think you did.
Very, very funny. But Percy cannot say, is it Laestrygonians?
Or Laestrygonians.
Laestrygonians. Yeah, one of those. I can't really say it either. But he was like, what would you call them in English? And Annabeth just kind of thinks for a moment and goes, Canadians. And I think it's just because they live like in the north, so she couldn't equate it to anything else other than Canadians. And it was so funny. Oh my gosh.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's a good moment. It's a perfect moment. And so Annabeth, I love it. Mm-hmm. Mine was between Percy and the Gray sisters, when he's got the eyeball dangling out the window and he says, tell me, and they all just go, no, in sequence. Like, I just have this visual of him like being insolent, like, tell me, and them going, no, like all at once. And it just, just stands out to me as this really ridiculous and awesome moment. So, okay. And speaking of moments, let's do our favorite moments. You want to go first?
Yeah. Percy, was trying to break the news to Tyson that the Greek gods are still alive and that they're basically heroes and all this stuff from mythology is real. And Tyson is completely unfazed. He just keeps saying, yes. Yes. And Percy's like, what is this? Why is this not shocking to you? And then Annabeth kind of has to explain to him like, he's a Cyclops, by the way. But that moment was so funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So good. Again, I think you got the better of the,
of sorry, the moment. Like, so what happens when you get to make the doc?
Right. You get first dibs. I get it. But yeah, mine was Percy's daring attempt to blackmail information out of the Gray sisters. I think that it just stands out because it's so bold and insane of him to do.
Stupid.
Especially as they're hurtling toward their death. Like, yeah. Hey, purse, give them the eye back. Come on. So yeah, definitely a good moment for sure. All right. So let's move on to chapter 4 entitled Tyson Plays with Fire. Large metal bulls are attacking the camp. Wait, how? Apparently, monsters can now enter Camp Half-Blood. Clarice needs Percy and Annabeth's help, so they rush to her rescue, but they aren't really having much luck. So, thank God, Tyson is near. Percy's new buddy rushes in to save the day, and they get the Colchis bulls, which were made by Hephaestus himself, under control. Clarice is a little pissed that Percy and Annabeth intervened, but she quickly gets back to the task of leading and helping her fellow campers. The injured must go to the big house, and it's also a good time and place to ask Tantalus, the new activities director, what to do about Tyson.
What?
I know, right? I don't like any of it.
Yeah.
Lots of not good going on in this fourth chapter, but
yeah, but these first four chapters are so action-packed, like so much has happened already. He just really jumps into the middle of it, but not in like a confusing way, in a just like, let's just get this show on the road kind of way.
I agreed. Yeah, it's insane how much goes on in these first four chapters, from you know, the gym fight to meeting Tyson to this taxi ride to them fighting the bulls. Like, it's just boom, 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 boom. And, you know, we're off to the races. Gotta love it, though. We, again, in this chapter, we get Annabeth being kind of mean about Tyson. We basically already discussed this. But yeah, she goes on in this chapter to explain that Tyson is a Cyclops and exactly what that means and what she knows about them, basically. And I like that Percy is defensive of Tyson and is like, he's like a person and he's right here. Like, he might be a Cyclops, but like, he's still alive and has feelings. So don't be mean. Don't be.
Yeah. Sorry. Poor Tyson.
Which is good for Percy. I think it's good for him to stand up to Annabeth on occasion, because she's so smart and has so much to share and tell him most of the time. And he can trust her to tell him the truth, but it's good that he has these moments where he might actually know more, because he's been spending time with Tyson and knows that he's not just, you know, what she expects out of a Cyclops. Like, he's a good person too. So I love that. So Talia's tree is dying.
Yeah.
What the heck?
It's not good, Bob. It's not good.
It's been poisoned, which is what allowed these bulls into the camp in the first place. And we'll get to the bulls in a second, but I mean, I know we don't really know, like, for sure what is going on, and we're supposed to kind of not know what's going on, but we do know now that the tree is poisoned, that that's what weakened the borders of camp, which is what allowed all of these monsters in and all of that jazz. And it's just, it's so much. I can't remember. Do we know what poisoned the tree? We don't know that yet, right?
No, we don't know yet.
Okay, good. See? On the same page. just keeping it moving. We should talk about the bulls, though, because this is kind of an epic, crazy fight scene.
Yeah, it's so, like, it's so exciting. And Rick is such a great writer. I know that, like, preaching to the choir here, but, like, I can envision so much of this stuff in my mind's eye. Like, I can really see how it will look on screen. And I think the bulls are one of the best creatures to show on screen. They're so easy to picture. And yeah, season two, like, it's just going to be a banger of an open.
Right? Yeah. These metal, like, you can almost feel like maybe golden bulls just like running around, and you can almost hear the metal like clashing against each other as they're running around and causing chaos and attempting to, you know, blast campers out of the way and all of that stuff. Just it's so visual. I can't wait. I really can't.
And even just thinking of like Tyson and how he's going to be interacting with them too, and what they'll have to do to make that all look real, because he's fireproof. And he doesn't need the SPF 50,000 to be fireproof.
I love how Annabeth is digging in her bag. Like, I know I have a bottle of that coconut oil, whatever.
Yeah, she was like, coconut scented, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it was so funny.
Oh, that's such a good one. Good. Gotta love it. So, yeah, things have definitely changed around camp. Not just the fact that monsters can, like, you know, waltz in and they have to have a border guard, basically, at this point. But Tantalus.
Yep.
Where's Chiron?
Yeah.
What's Mr. D doing? Why do we have other people in charge? What is going on? Yeah. And, of course, we get no answers in this chat.
I know. We have to wait.
Yep. So it'll be a little bit of a wait, but we will find out next time what is going on, or at least why Tantalus is there, hopefully. And we'll see what Clarice has been up to in all of this downtime.
Right.
Before Annabeth and Percy got there, we'll figure out what's going on. So that pretty much wraps up chapter 4. We should do favorite quotes. I will start this time, because mine comes from Clarice, and it's basically her just being pissed that Percy and Annabeth ran in to save the day and stole her thunder, and she yells, "You ruin everything! I had it under control!" Like, she clearly didn't have it under control, but she likes to believe she did, and it just cracks me up. Karen, what was yours?
My favorite quote is just Tyson saying "bad cow" because it was so funny.
It did make me giggle while reading it.
Like, yeah, also I think I heard you, in case you guys didn't see our Twitter, the cat was annoying Kristen this morning. She really wanted to cuddle and Kristen was like, "No, I have stuff to do," and so she ended up reading the chapter aloud to the cat and really settled her down, actually. And I think I remember hearing you go "bad cow" and it made me laugh.
She likes to hear me read, or like just talk, tell her stories or whatnot.
Yeah.
I've noticed this before, because sometimes, you know, she'll be incessant with her meowing in my face, like, "Love me, pet me, let me cuddle you," and I'm like, "I can't, I have to work right now." But yeah, sometimes if I just talk to her and tell her a story, she likes that, and reading worked today, so whatever. I will read to her all the time if that's what it takes. But yeah, so let's keep moving. Favorite moments. Karen, go.
Okay, my favorite moment was actually when Clarice puts aside her anger at Percy to take care of her soldiers. Because in the first book, Clarice is kind of a one-dimensional character in that she's very clearly the bully. She's very clearly antagonistic to Percy, and we just are coming off of Percy defeating Ares, and, you know, all of the Ares cabin kids are mad at Percy and all of that, but she's a good soldier and she is a good leader and she cares about the people under her care. And I think that you're peeling a little bit of her very literal armor away in order to see this side of her. And it's just a good way to make a character a little more three-dimensional, a little more realistic. And I actually felt some emotions for Clarice in that moment, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, because up till now, she's mostly just been the bully, the Ares kid who's always up for fighting. And yeah, we don't really see a lot of her softer side. So it is kind of nice to see a moment where there's something more important than beating the crap out of Percy. There really are things more important than that. My favorite moment was Tyson coming into the rescue and then Percy realizing that he wasn't just incinerated by the vault. Like, Percy looks up expecting his bestie to be like a pile of dust and he's just fine. Like, maybe a little singed, but he's good. His clothes are melting off his body, but he's like, "Yeah, it's fine. You know, whatever."
I think that was the thing that surprised me, because didn't he say his clothes were also fine? So does that mean that anything...
Oh, were they?
I think so. So are they special Tyson clothes, like special Cyclops clothes, or is it like any clothes that he's wearing or anything he touches is also fireproof? That can't be true. But I just wonder how works.
I wonder if it's like Percy and water.
Maybe like his power like extends to like his outer layer of clothing.
Yeah, like Percy's clothes don't really get wet unless he lets them. So
that's okay. That must be what it is then. Okay, that's so,
like,
interesting.
For Tyson, the fire is basically like water, I would imagine. Like he's a little more, you know, insulated to it, so he can keep his clothes.
Yeah.
That's right, because it's Percy's clothes that are falling off.
Right, yeah, yeah. It'd be really awkward too if he like got incinerated and he's just standing there naked in front of everybody. Maybe he would have had like fireproof undies or something.
Right. That totally feels like a Rick detail.
Yeah.
We'll have to see if that, you know, becomes a thing. Yeah. Instead of fireproof clothes, he has fireproof undies.
Yeah, that would be funny.
But anyway, yeah, that was definitely one of my favorite moments, because it's just kind of funny that Percy's like, oh God. And then, oh, he's fine. Wait, this isn't normal. But yeah, that pretty much wraps up chapter 4. We'll be back next time with chapters 5 and 6. So read on, friends. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at subjectifymedia.com. We are home to 3 other podcasts, including Rewatchable, where we rewatch canceled and cult classic shows. Not About the Weather, which is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with creators, and Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, which was recently revived thanks to the upcoming Teen Wolf movie. Contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast, or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long form thoughts at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. Also, please look us up on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms, and consider leaving us a review, especially those 5-star ratings really help other people find us. So please consider that if you have a spare moment or two today. And you can leave us questions and comments on any of those places and let us know what you want to hear or see, or if you have any input for, you know, for one of our topics, especially today's. If you have favorite moments, please reach out. We do have one bit of feedback. Karen, do you want to read this for us?
Yes. So when we did our Lightning Thief musical episode with Irvin, we put in a little giveaway at the end of that for Irvin's book, Dumbledore, The Life and Lies. And we got a winner, Jim Hayes, the man with a plan, at Big Jimbo Extreme. Tweeted, I just wanted to give a huge shout out and thanks to Dark Lord of Dance, which is Irvin's Twitter handle, and Prophecy Podcast for winning this awesome book in a giveaway of theirs. If you love all things Harry Potter, go check out their pages and give them a follow. And it's a really cute picture of him holding the book up, which looks very cool. And I was just really excited that people participated and that somebody got to win this cool book.
Agreed. It's very good fun. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to do more giveaways in the future. We'll have to see how that works out. But yeah, it was fun. We enjoyed it. So
definitely.
We like giving out free stuff. We just have to get free stuff. But we'll work on that later. Okay. So next week's episode, we're going to be talking about the novellas, the short stories, the companion books, the illustrated editions, everything else that exists in the Percy Jackson world, right?
Yes. Yeah. I'm really excited about this because it's been a while since I've read some of them. We're not going to go through like plot details or anything, but I just kind of want to go through, remember what's out there, kind of give a rundown for people who maybe aren't aware of some of the smaller things that exist within the Camp Half-Blood Chronicles universe. These are like canonical things and different versions of the books. So I am very, very excited about that. And it should be a fun little episode.
Agreed. And that way we'll all be on the same plane. What
page?
What was my page? Wow. My brain decided we were going to be on the same plane, and yes. I'm good with it. Let's just go. So until next time, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.